From Milwaukee's NPR, this is Capital Notes. We break down the big political news affecting Wisconsin. I'm Chuck Quernbach, filling in for Mayan Silver, speaking with J.R. Ross, editor of WisPolitics.com. Here's our latest conversation. Well, hi, J.R. Welcome to the State of the State Capital Notes edition.
Thanks for having me.
So, Governor Tony Evers, Tuesday evening before the state legislature, and really the whole state, of course, delivering this speech, what are you hearing about what he might say?
Well, I mean, most governors I've covered have used their State of the State address in the odd-numbered years as kind of the setting the stage for their budget. So I expect people I talk to expect to hear Evers, you know, kind of lay out some priorities for this budget that'll be released in mid-February. That includes things like, you know, increasing funding for schools, increasing shared revenue for local communities to help them cover costs related to public safety. You know, things he's already laid out that are his priorities for this budget, he's going to basically kind of queue up that budget a little bit and maybe throw out a couple more nuggets of stuff he plans to do. This is a way to kind of build the attention, the anticipation of that budget that'll come out in mid-February.
And the replies expected from Republican State Assembly Speaker Robin Voss of Racine County, I imagine he'll have some different things to say.
Yeah, it'll be the counter. It'll be like what their priorities are. So, you know, they're far apart in a number of things. You know, Governor Evers wants to do, for example, what he calls a middle-class tax cut around the $600 million package. Republicans are talking about a flat tax. Now, they're not all on the same page yet. There's just a proposal that's been floated by Devin Lemahieu, the Senate Majority Leader, but there is definitely a push by Republicans to lower taxes, especially that top tax bracket of 7.65%, which they argue is needed to make Wisconsin more competitive. Governor Evers is not going to sign a budget, he says, with a lowering of that top tax bracket. So right now we're just drawing lines in the sand to see if anyone's going to cross them when it comes time to get a deal done with a budget down the line.
Well, before the budget comes out, what else might the legislature do? They've already set this constitutional amendment ballot question on bail and also the advisory referendum on welfare recipients. What else might they be up to in the next couple of weeks?
It's honestly kind of quiet right now because there hasn't been a lot of committee work yet to get things advanced to go to the floor. So it looks like Republicans are taking a different tack with this session than last session. 2 years ago, they began sending bill after bill after bill to Evers that he vetoed, and he set the record for the most number of vetoes in a single session, more than 120. I'm not getting the sense that they think that's really worthwhile this time around. Maybe they'll try and put him in a difficult spot on some things, but those bills 2 years ago that were sent also, you know, put the governor on record with what Republicans thought were popular things with the public that would make things difficult for him politically. He won re-election. Didn't really matter, it seemed like. Some more time being taken, it seems like, to figure out what's really worthwhile in this atmosphere.
Republicans last week squashed Democrats' efforts to get a ballot question on abortion rights. There were other significant developments on the abortion front, of course, Sunday's march in Madison. HHS Secretary Javier Becerra in Milwaukee and Cudahy promoting the Biden administration's support for reproductive rights. Attorney General Josh Call of Wisconsin filing another motion in the abortion case before Dane County judge. What do you make of all that?
Well, you know, the referendum that Democrats push is really trying to change the discussion from what Republicans were pushing, which is an advisory referendum on whether able-bodied childless adults should have to look for work before they qualify for public benefits. That's already the law. That requirement's already in place, but Republicans argue it is something they wanted to gauge the public on because we're facing a shortage of workers right now. It's also a little bit of an effort to try and drive some turnout ahead of the April election, the Supreme Court race on the ballot. And talking to insiders last week, I didn't get the impression they thought this would really be a huge driver, especially compared to the Supreme Court race period where there'll be millions and millions and millions of dollars spent on that race. But some of this abortion stuff, it just Democrats are trying to change the topic from that to a discussion about abortion. Got Republicans on record with a roll call vote opposing bringing that referendum up for a vote that they can use in campaigns down the road. And really, the abortion issue is it just hangs over everything right now in the Capitol and the Supreme Court race. Until there is something that's settled it somewhat more than it is now, it's going to be a difficult issue for Republicans. They tell me all the time that this is going to shade the Supreme Court race. It could hang over that special election in the 8th Senate District because the law in the books is a ban that only allows an exception for the life of the mother, nothing for rape or incest. And you know, Republicans acknowledge that is not what the public is. They're trying to figure out how to navigate that issue, knowing it's unlikely they can get anything added to those exceptions because, one, Evers won't sign an exceptions bill because it would codify a ban that he disagrees with. And two, Republicans aren't sure they could get any exceptions through the two Republican caucuses right now because Democrats won't vote for them, and they don't have the support in their caucuses in either house to get that bill through possibly. So it's a challenge for them.
The motion Attorney General Call filed was to argue against the case being dismissed. Is that right?
Yeah, it was a procedural motion, basically arguing that he has standing, we call it in court and legal world, to challenge this law. The Sheboygan County DA has filed a motion seeking to dismiss the lawsuit, saying that essentially Call does not have standing to sue because he's not impacted by the law. If it's enforced, he's not personally impacted. Call countered, no, that's not how it works. My opinion is this, that I do have standing. I made the same argument for the doctors who are part of that lawsuit. So it was really a procedural thing at this point.
Well, you mentioned the Supreme Court race, of course. One big development seems that at least one candidate out of Milwaukee County is prepared to spend big money on television.
Yeah, Janet Prosewicz, she raised a record $924,000 last year for her campaign, the most we've seen any candidate for the Supreme Court raise in the year before the election. She's now putting that money to good use with a $700,000 TV buy. We'll cover the last 3 weeks of the race ahead of the February 21st primary. This is a huge advantage for her because most folks don't know who these candidates are. Yes, Jennifer Doro out of Waukesha County has some, you know, kind of name recognition because of the Daryl Brooks trial, right? Like she got some of that. Daniel Kelly used to be on the Supreme Court. There's a little bit of name ID for him that way, but they're not really well-known figures. This is a significant TV buy for Judge Prosewicz that she can go out now and boost her name ID. It also solidifies a belief among insiders that she is the strongest of the two liberal candidates for the court. Judge Everett Mitchell of Dane County is also in that primary. He only raised about $115,000 the last 6 months of the year, $140,000 overall in 2022. He is well behind where everybody else is. He doesn't have the resources to do a media buy, much like what Prosewicz is doing. So it's a huge advantage for her in a low turnout primary where people are trying to figure out who these guys are to have that kind of a TV buy up on the air.
Mitchell's not out of it. He, as you say, he's in Dane County, which is a big-time vote generator. So he's going to have some hometown support, if you will.
Yeah, the issue for him is there are some stories in a couple of papers about divorce proceedings in which there was a custody battle. His wife accused him of, after she took a sleeping pill, undressing and having sex with her without her consent. That kind of story is not great if you're a candidate. Now, people I talk to don't expect anybody to use it in the primary and paid media. But when you're Mitchell and you're trailing so much financially, it's the kind of story that can give donors pause of, well, do I want to give to that guy? Because that's a story that can be used or would be used in a general election. When you're talking about ideological control of the Supreme Court being up for grabs in April, that would be a tough story to get through. So it's not helping him raise money. And people are kind of curious if he can turn things around and really turn on the fundraising the last couple of weeks of this primary and make a difference or try to catch up to where Prosewicz is.
We should note that Judge Mitchell and his former wife seem to be on pretty good terms now, at least officially.
Yes. She has said he should be judged on how he has performed as a judge, not on what happened or was alleged to have happened in this proceeding some years ago. It's just the reality in politics is that's out there, and it kind of hangs over his campaign a little bit and makes it a challenge for him.
On the conservative side, Judge Doro picking up some endorsements. Dan Kelly has raised a lot of money. It seems neck and neck in some ways on the conservative candidates.
Yeah, Kelly raised about $312,000 roughly, somewhere around there, $310,000, from getting in mid-September through the end of the year. Doro's a few thousand bucks behind, but that's only in 1 month. So it kind of, again, underscores for her that there's momentum for her, right? I mean, that's a pretty good month for a campaign to get in there and raise $300,000. Now, the challenge is neither of the two has enough money right now for a significant media buy ahead of the primary. So who's going to come in, if anybody, to help them? We know there's this group called Fair Courts America. It's tied to Dick Uihlein, an Illinois businessman and GOP mega donor. He has promised to spend millions and millions to help Daniel Kelly. Will he come in and spend that money ahead of the primary? More importantly, will he do it to build up Dan Kelly or tear down Judge Doro? And that's a huge question. So it's going to be interesting to watch, you know, if anybody else spends money in that primary outside groups. What I'm used to seeing in Supreme Court races is like a 10 days out, maybe 2 weeks, some outside group comes in and spends a little bit to help one candidate or the other get through the primary, because these are not high turnout primaries. They're not well-known candidates oftentimes. These don't raise enough money on their own. They have a significant media presence, so you usually see that. But this is a whole different ballgame. This is going to be the most expensive race for the Supreme Court we've ever seen in Wisconsin at this point. And I'm fascinated to watch who comes in to play in this race ahead of the primary, if anybody, and how they spend their money.
Could be a lively late January and early February.
Yes.
Thanks very much, JR.
Anytime.
That was J.R. Ross of WisPolitics.com speaking with me, WUWM's Chuck Kornbach. Listen for our segments every Monday and check out the Capital Notes podcast wherever you get your podcasts.